ॐ अग्निजमिनन्दस्य जनाजना सुलकया चक्षुस्मृतं येन तस्मै श्रीरवे नमः श्रीचैतन्यमनुविष्टं स्तुभितां येन भूतले सायमुपगदां मायां ददति सापनन्तिकम् वंशिकपतुभ्यश्च कृपसिन्धुभैः च पतितनं पवनेभ्यो वैष्णवेभ्यो नमो नमः Prahlad Maharaj is instructing his school friends and telling them what he learned within the womb from Narada Muni. While he was within the womb, Narada Muni was instructing his mother and him, and he remembered everything by the blessings of Narada. So Narada had told him, or instructed, about the existence of the soul and the super soul within everybody. And covered within the material ingredients. And an expert, just like a geologist or a mineralogist, can extract the gold from its ore, from its stone, where it's hidden within. Similarly, an expert spiritualist can extract with his consciousness, he can understand, perceive the existence of the soul within the body. Whereas someone who has no knowledge in that way is unable to perceive this. The last verse we read, 22, described how the soul was trapped and conditioned, controlled, limited by its material covering, the different elements that the soul, the 24 elements, which the soul was in. And one must learn the system. The bhakti yoga system especially, of extracting the soul from within its coverings. But before describing more about bhakti, Prahlad is going to speak in text 23 and a bit onward. He's going to explain the process of jnana yoga, the process of, through the intelligence, understanding or calming the mind down and meditating upon who one really is and who one really isn't, and understanding who the actual nature of the soul. So he explains in 23. There are two kinds of bodies for every individual soul. A gross body made of the five gross elements, bhumi rupo nilo vayu, earth, water, fire, air, and ether, and a subtle body made of the three subtle elements, Buddha, mana, and false ego, the intelligence, mind, and false ego. Within these bodies, however, is the spirit soul. One must find the soul by analyzing, saying, this is not it, this is not it. Thus one must separate spirit from matter, because generally we identify, conditioned, we identify with both the gross body, the subtle body, and also in addition everything connected with the gross and subtle body. But we're souls, eternal. We do not die, we do not deteriorate. So this identification makes it appear as if the soul is deteriorating in the same way as if we have identification with some of our clothes and they get ripped. So we feel the pain as if we were ripping, practically speaking. If we were ruined, if we were soiled, due to the identification. So how to extract the identification and place the sense from what it isn't, from what the soul isn't, and place it upon what the soul actually is. So this is the process of separating spirit from matter, jnana yoga, or the neti, neti, neti. I'm not this, I'm not this, I'm not this. This is a process of meditation, of allowing the consciousness to view itself, allowing consciousness to view itself through the intelligence, basically, or letting the mind become very peaceful. So consciousness, through the intelligence, views itself. And it can clearly perceive in this way what it is not, and that it exists, and it is not the different parts of the body. Here's Prabhupada's purpose. As previously stated, svanam yata gravasu hemakara chatreshu gais tad abhigya apnuyat. An expert in the study of soil can find out where gold is and then dig there. He can then analyze the stone and test the gold with nitric acid. Similarly, one must analyze the whole body to find out within the body the spirit soul. So this is a meditative process. The mind is calmed by, in so many different ways it's possible to do it in the yoga process. The mind is slowed down through the breath control or through different meditative techniques. And then when there is a bit of a... when the mind is calmed down, then one can bring one's consciousness to the different parts of the body and perceive clearly that it is not me. In studying one's own body, one must ask himself whether his head is his soul. Is this me? Is this the consciousness, or my consciousness touching this, perceiving this, illuminating it? I'm moving the consciousness from one part of the body to another. We see clearly that it is not us. One must ask himself whether his head is his soul. Is the head me? His fingers, are they his soul? His hand is his soul, and so on. In this way, one must gradually reject all the material elements and combinations of material elements in the body. Then if one is expert and follows the Acharya, he can understand that he is the spirit soul living within the body, that he is not the body, the different parts of the body, but rather there's consciousness within the body. And the consciousness is coming from him, the soul. The greatest Acharya, Krishna, he's the original teacher, begins his teachings in Bhagavad Gita by saying, Dehinosmin yata dehe komaram jovanam jara teta dehantara praptiya diras tatra namuyati. As the embodied soul continuously passes in this body from boyhood to youth to old age, the soul similarly passes into another body at death. The self-realized soul is not bewildered by such a change. Bhagavad Gita 2.13. The spirit soul possesses the body and is within the body. This is the real analysis. So by using this meditative process, one has to be completely aloof from all material activities, basically. And yet one is not on the level of being qualified to have spiritual activity. So this process is actually quite difficult to follow. But yet, this is the process. And it works. It's a gradual process of clearly seeing, perceiving the consciousness within the body and knowing that is coming from oneself, and the body is something completely different. Although the soul is within the body, it is separate and always pure. One must analyze and understand his self. This is self-realization. But taking to this process doesn't allow us to understand in and of itself that we are Krishna's servant. Jivera supoi Krishna nityadas. Only by hearing can really one understand that. Hearing from someone exalted. But yet this is self-realization, realizing what the self is. Neti neti is the analytical process of rejecting matter. By expertly conducting such an analysis, one can understand where the soul is. One who is not expert, however, cannot distinguish gold from earth, nor the soul from the body. So the consciousness, the awareness, the intelligence is different from the body. Text 24. Anvaya vatirekena, the direct and indirect vivek, discrimination. Through this direct and indirect perceiving oneself and perceiving what one not is, this type of what one isn't, this type of discrimination allows one to clearly to get closer to understanding his true position. Sober and expert persons should search for the spirit soul with minds purified through analytical study in terms of the soul's connection with and distinction from all things that undergo creation, maintenance, and destruction. So again, separating oneself, one's identification, clarifying who one is and who one isn't, what one is, what one isn't, that one is the soul, one is eternal, and the symptom of that soul is consciousness. So we are the consciousness, not that which the consciousness illuminates. I'm reading from Prabhupada's purport. So because one might ask after this analysis, well, where is the soul? Perceiving its illumination throughout the body, but where is it? How do we learn that? A sober man avails himself of this Vedic instruction. And then there's a Sanskrit quotation from the Taittiriya Upanishad. Thus he can understand that the head, hands, legs, and indeed the entire body have grown on the basis of the soul. If the soul is within, the body, head, hands, and legs grow, but otherwise they do not. A dead child does not grow up, for the soul is not present. If by a careful analysis of the body one still cannot find the existence of the soul, this is due to his ignorance, his inability to break his identification with the body. And this is due to lower modes of material nature, especially the mode of ignorance and passion. How can a gross man, fully engaged in materialistic activities, understand the soul, which is a small particle of spirit, 1/10,000th the size of the tip of a hair, so tiny, and that tiny spiritual spark is illuminating the entire body with consciousness. So a person whose consciousness is gross cannot understand something subtle. If the mind is inflamed with passion and dulled by ignorance, how can something so subtle be perceived? So such a person who is gross foolishly thinks that the material body has grown from a combination of chemicals, although he cannot find the chemicals. He cannot take a dead body and add some chemicals and bring the dead body back to life. The Vedas inform us, however, that chemical combinations do not constitute the living force. The living force is the Atma and Paramatma, and the body grows on the basis of that living force. So there is the soul, and then that which gives the ability to the soul is the super soul. The fruit of a tree grows and undergoes six kinds of changes because of the presence of the tree. If there were no tree, there could be no question of the growth and maturity of the fruit. Therefore, beyond the existence of the body are the Paramatma and Atma within the body. This is the first understanding of spiritual knowledge explained in Bhagavad Gita, Dehenosmin Yata Dehe. The body exists because of the presence of the Supreme Lord and the Jiva, which is part of the Lord. So without the super soul, the soul would not have its abilities. So there's the soul and the super soul providing the consciousness. to the body. Now, perceiving the supersoul, it's moving up in consciousness, because just perceiving the soul is the process of jnana yoga, but this can very easily lead to impersonalism, because the jnana yogis, if they it is a stage or a step in self-realization, because the full realization of the self is to understand the self is Krishna's service. When the soul, the self is partially realized, is Krishna's servant. So when the soul is partially realized, he realizes that he is eternal, and he is the source, he is the consciousness. But unfortunately, one can easily fall into impersonalism at that time and identify with the totality of consciousness. So to become more deeply realized, one realizes that there is a super soul, and the business of the eternal soul is to, the eternal insignificant soul is to surrender to the eternal great Paramatma. 25. So perceiving the super soul is not possible by our own power. That is a gift from Krishna. Purushavapara. Intelligence can be perceived in three states of activity: wakefulness, dreaming, and deep sleep. So there's the soul, and it shines through the intelligence and perceives these three states of consciousness: wakefulness, dreaming, and deep sleep. The person who perceives these three is to be considered the original master, the ruler, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So the soul can perceive that he is awake, and he can perceive that he is sleeping. But he cannot perceive deep sleep, his deep sleep, a dreamless sleep. But the Supreme Personality of Godhead perceives all three states of the soul. And when the soul wakes up from deep sleep, even though he can't remember what was going on in dreaming sleep, he can remember, he can perceive. He remembers, oh, I just had this and this dream and this and this dream. Or sometimes I had a dream, but what was it? I can't remember it. But in deep sleep, he has no remembrance. But when he wakes up from deep sleep, he still has the perception that, oh, I was sleeping so deeply. It was me who was sleeping. So that perception, remembrance of what he can't remember, is actually a gift of Krishna too. Because Krishna, as the super soul, is perceiving all three states. Well, the soul can't perceive his own deep sleep, but he remembers having slept. The continuity of identity is there. He remembers that, oh, I'm the same person, and I was sleeping deeply. Here's Prabhupada's purport. Without intelligence, one cannot understand the direct activities of the senses, because the intelligence is reflected upon what is going on. Nor can he understand dreaming or the cessation of all gross and subtle activities, which is deep sleep. So the intelligence allows that. The seer and controller is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the Supreme Soul, by whose direction the individual soul can understand when he's awake, when he is sleeping, and when he is completely in trance. In Bhagavad Gita 15:15, the Lord says, Savasya cham riddhi sanavisto matam smitya jnanam aponam cha. I'm seated in everyone's heart, and for me comes remembrance, knowledge, and forgetfulness. The living entities are completely absorbed in the three states of wakefulness, dreaming, and deep sleep through their intelligence. This intelligence is implied by the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who accompanies the individual soul as a friend. So the intelligence to perceive I was sleeping, or I'm awake, or I was dreaming. This is a gift of Krishna. Text 26. As one can understand the presence of the air by the aromas it carries, so under the guidance of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, one can understand the living soul by these three divisions of intelligence. These three divisions, however, are not the soul. They are constituted of the three modes and are born of activities. Prabhupada's purport. As already explained, there are three states to our existence, namely wakefulness, dreaming, and deep sleep, conditioned existence. In all three states, we have different experiences. Thus, the soul is the observer of these three states. And again, although the soul doesn't consciously observe deep sleep, when he wakes up, he observes that he has been deeply asleep. Actually, the activities of the body are not the activities of the soul. So that observation ability is done through the intelligence. But this isn't. But these are all not activities of the body. Excuse me, they are activities of the body, but they are not activities of the soul. The soul is beyond these three stages. It has its own life. But conditioned, covered, it experiences these three stages, which are composed of the three modes of material nature. The soul is different from the body. Just as aromas are distinct from the material vehicle in which they are carried, the soul is unattached to material activities. This analysis can be considered by a person who is fully under the shelter of the lotus feet of the Supreme Lord. This is confirmed by the Vedic injunction, Yasmin Vigyate Sarvamevam Vigyatam Bhavati. If one can understand the Supreme Personality of Godhead, one can automatically understand everything else. Because of not taking shelter of the Lord's lotus feet, even great scholars, scientists, philosophers, and religionists are always bewildered. So they cannot perceive the soul as different from the body, or to speak of the super soul as supplying all the intelligence and ability for the soul. Through polluted intelligence, text 27, one is subjected to the modes of nature. And thus, one is conditioned by material existence. Like a dreaming state in which one falsely suffers, material existence, which is due to ignorance, must be considered unwanted and temporary. We'll read from Prabhupada's purport about halfway through. As advised by Maharaj Rishabdev, Nasaru manye yata atmanoyam masan apiklesha da asya deha. One must be intelligent enough to understand that although one's body is temporary and will not endure for long, as long as one has a body, he must undergo the pangs of material existence. Therefore, if by good association, by the instructions of a bona fide spiritual master, one takes the Krishna consciousness, his conditional life of material existence is vanquished, and his original consciousness, known as Krishna consciousness, is revived. When one is Krishna conscious, he can realize that material existence, whether one is awake or dreaming, is nothing but a dream and has no factual value. This realization is possible by the grace of the Supreme Lord. This grace is also present in the form of the instructions of Bhagavad Gita. Therefore, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's mission is for everyone to engage in welfare activities to awaken the foolish living entity, especially in human society, so that he may come to the platform of Krishna consciousness and benefit by liberation from conditional life. In this connection, Srila Madhvacharya cites the following verses. Dukarupo api samsaro buddhi purvam avapyate yatas sapne shiras chedam svayam kritat tamano vasha tato dukam avapyeta tata jagritopi tu janam apyatmano dukam anvashas tu pravartate. One must realize that the material condition of life is full of distresses. One can realize this with purified intelligence. Why can't one realize this with contaminated intelligence, that material life is full of distresses? Because if one is contaminated, that means someone's controlled by ignorance and passion. One's gross consciousness is so full of desires and passion, so full of desires and ignorance, so the desires are so intense and covered that one has no ability to understand the actual nature of material life. But in goodness, the mode of goodness, which itself is conditioned, it's material, but it brings one to the door of spiritual life. Because goodness is fine, it is subtle, it is clear, it is clean. It allows the consciousness to perceive that it is not the body. It allows consciousness to perceive that to identify with the body is a misidentification. This is the benefit of goodness. It brings knowledge. Satvam sanjayate jnanam. So polluted consciousness, covered consciousness, is required to be cleaned. So therefore one can realize this, the distress of material life, through purified intelligence. When one's intelligence is purified, he can understand that unwanted temporary material life is just like a dream. Because one's consciousness can become crystal clear. And when one is crystal clear in goodness, then this material world seems such a burden. Such a burden. And one has no attachment to it. This is the benefit of goodness. And how ironic it is that the more one is covered, the grosser one's consciousness is, one can't perceive this at all, and how one wants to enjoy, one's desires are so powerful and so controlling that one, it's like when one desires something very strongly and he's working so hard to get his desires, or maybe even walking through sticker bushes and brambles, and all he sees is what he wants, and he doesn't even notice that he's being cut at every step and his body is being injured and pained. This is the nature of passion. Doesn't notice his own pain. And then in ignorance, his consciousness becomes so dull. Like even for an operation, during an operation, they put you to sleep, they give you some anesthetic. Why? The consciousness becomes dull and then you don't experience any pain. So that's ignorance. The intoxication, the madness, a result of not wishing to experience all the pain. But is that a true solution? No, it's a temporary solution. And because you don't experience the pain doesn't mean that the pain isn't there. So rather than grossifying our consciousness, if there's such a word, making our consciousness more gross, we should purify the consciousness. Because that is the ultimate solution. Just as one suffers pain when one's head is cut off in a dream, in ignorance one suffers not only while dreaming, but also while awake. Without the mercy of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, one continues in ignorance and is thus subjected to material distresses in various ways. So Prahlad is telling his school friends that you are not the body. You are not your little daitya bodies. What are you? You're eternal. Therefore, my friends, discover yourselves as souls. Take to Krishna consciousness. So that's the next section. This section was sort of a leading them on the path through past the previous parts, which told them not to get entangled in material life, to take the spiritual life, to take shelter of the Lord. Why? Because we're souls. And there is a super soul. Purify the consciousness and understand you are a soul, that there is a Supreme Lord. And then Krishna consciousness comes in. It's when the soul takes shelter of that super soul, becomes a servant of that Supreme Lord. So therefore the realization will go from Gyan to Paramatma to Bhagawan when the soul takes shelter of that Supreme Lord. Therefore, my dear friends, O sons of the demons, your duty is to take to Krishna consciousness, which can burn the seed of fruit of activities artificially created by the modes of material nature and stop the flow of intelligence in wakefulness, dreaming, and deep sleep. In other words, when one takes to Krishna consciousness, his ignorance is immediately dissipated. Why? Because what is the root of the ignorance is housed in the false ego. The prime covering over the soul, his false identification as not Krishna's servant, and then his false positive identification, I'm the body. I'm something other than Krishna's servant. I'm separate from Krishna. So in Krishna consciousness, the soul takes shelter of Krishna again, and all that is burst right at the root, and the seed no longer can fructify in the material world. The intelligence can no longer misidentify with falsity in the three states of consciousness, of wakefulness, one type of a dream. One time someone asked Prabhupada about how to dream and did it have any meaning. And Prabhupada's reply was, daydream, night dream, it's the same. Illusion. And the waking state is our relationship with Krishna. But how unfortunate we are now that that seems so far away. And what seems so real and immediate to us is the dream. Just like when we're dreaming at night, something's going on. Someone's chasing us, or we're chasing someone, or we're wandering, or we're lost, and we're trying to get somewhere we can't get there, or we're flying. It seems so real to us. The intelligence is focusing there. The self-identification is focusing. And then when we wake up, we realize, oh, that was a dream, and we get back to our real life. And when we wake up from a dream, it's like getting into remembering our identity again. Oh, I'm this, and gradually the pieces fall into place, who I am, and again the subtle body and gross body align, and then you can start moving again, and you can tie your shoes or whatever, you can stand up without falling over or tripping. It's the subtle and the soul and the identity and the subtle and gross, all they line up again, all an illusion though. So how to disentangle the soul from this very intricate, so intricate web of Maya? Because people try to get out, but missing the core of the illusion. And then what happens? The illusion grows again in a different form, if its cause isn't removed. So again, the cause is this false ego. So therefore, Prahlad says in 29, he describes the best process of extricating the soul from material existence. Of the different processes recommended from disentanglement from material life, the one personally explained and accepted by the Supreme Personality of Godhead, yad ishwade bhagavati, I am bhagavatotitaha, explained by the Lord, given by the Lord. That process should be considered all perfect. The one personally explained and accepted by the Supreme Personality of Godhead should be considered all perfect. That process is the performance of duties by which love for the Supreme Lord develops. Yata yar ajasarati, by which quickly develops anjasa rati, quickly develops attachment with love and affection for the Lord, Ishwade, Bhagavati. Among the linking processes that elevate one from bondage to material contamination, the one recommended by the Supreme Personality of Godhead should be accepted as the best. That process is clearly explained in Bhagavad Gita, where the Lord says, Savadamam Pratyaja Mamikam Sharanam Vraja. Abandon all varieties of religion and just surrender to me. This process is the best because the Lord assures, Aham Tum Sava Papebhyo Mokshishami Masucha. I shall deliver you from all sinful reactions. Don't fear. Do not fear. So why is it the best? Because Krishna is going to do the delivering. How difficult it is to get out of Maya, this incredibly entangled web that we've been in for so long by our own power. Because Maya will try to use the very thing that we try to get out with to keep us in. Maya is so entangling and convoluted. We practice Jnana Yoga. We realize that we are not the body. It can be done. And then what happens? First of all, we have to act. We have to do something. Unless we're going to stay in trance 24 hours a day continuously, which is so difficult, even for the greatest sages. Because why? You have to eat something. The soul is naturally active. That's the main reason. So it has no sphere to act in. And then as soon as it acts, it doesn't have a realm of activities that is pure. So everything it does is karma. Entangles it further. So it tries to minimize, tries to be detached. But it can't. How can you minimize you? I guess they even try to minimize their breathing, the yogis. But who can do this? And then, as a product of all these austerities and deep, deep, deep realizations, so many people come and start saying, oh, you're so great, you're so powerful, bless me with this, bless me with that. And you start thinking, I'm great, I'm powerful, I have powers. I must be powerful, have powers. And then immediately, because the root of false ego is still there, so it will grow again. And then, boom! Yeni ravindakshava mukti mananastvayasta bhavarava shuddha buddhaya. Because of this impure intelligence not being removed, the root of the false ego. But soon as that is gone, then the whole material universe collapses. As soon as the desire to enjoy separately from the Lord no longer exists, the whole material creation collapses for us. And then Vishva Purnam Sukhayate. Then it actually becomes not a place of death, but a very happy place. Because it's Krishna's place. Instead of my field for enjoyment. So therefore Krishna's method is the best one because he removes the web. Ham tom sava papabhyo moksha shami masucha. Masucha means don't worry, do not fear. There is no need to be worried, for the Lord himself assures that he will care for his devotee and save him from the reactions of sinful activities. Because it is sinful activities that keep us in the material world, fill us with desires. Material bondage is a result of sinful activity. Therefore, since the Lord assures that he will dissipate the results of fruit of material activities, there is no need to be worried. This process of understanding one's position as a spirit soul and then engaging oneself in devotional service is therefore the best. The entire Vedic program is based on this principle, and one can understand it as recommended in the Vedas. So how to perform this devotional service? Sveta Svetara Upanishad, Prabhupada quotes that. Yasya deve parabhaktir yata deve tata goro tasya ete katitaya ta prakashante mahatmanaha. Unto those great souls who have implicit faith in both the Lord and the spiritual master, all the imports of Vedic knowledge are automatically revealed. Again, it is a gift, it is grace. One must accept the pure devotee, the representative of God, as one's guru, and then offer him all the respects one would offer the Supreme Personality of Godhead. This is the secret of success. For one who adopts this method, the perfect process is revealed. In this verse, the words Yar Anjasa Rati indicate that by offering service and surrendering to the spiritual master, one is elevated to devotional service. And by performing devotional service, one gradually becomes attached to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Yasya Prasada, Bhagavad Prasada, Yasya Prasada, Nagati Vitopi. Because of this attachment to the Lord, so this comes by the grace of the spiritual master. Because of this attachment to the Lord, one can understand the Lord. In other words, one can understand what the Lord's position is, what our position is, and what our relationship is. So this is the basic knowledge, tattva, who we are, who the Lord is, what our relationship is, what the process is of awakening that relationship. All this can be understood very easily by the simple method of bhakti yoga. I immediately think of something that Prabhupada said, that it is simple for the simple. For those of us who aren't so simple, or somewhat convoluted to being inmates in the prison known as Kali Yuga, it doesn't seem very simple. Trying to untangle it, because it seems so difficult in the sense, the entanglement. But what if this? We're yabbits. Yeah, but I have to do this. And yeah, but what about this? And yeah, but. On and on and on. So complicated. But all this can be understood very easily by the simple method of bhakti yoga. If we simply give our heart to Krishna and become attached to Krishna. And Kapila Muni explains this so nicely, also the process of doing this. As soon as one is situated on the platform of bhakti yoga, the root cause of one's suffering and material bondage is destroyed. This is clearly explained in the next verse, which gives the secret of success. Should we hear the secret of success? You've walked in just at the right moment. Are you ready for it? The secret of success? Okay, steady yourself. Guru Shushaya Bhaktya Savalabdha Parinacha Sangena Saru Bhaktanam Ishvararadhananenacha Shradaya Tatkatayam Cha Kirtanar Dunakarmanam Tatpadam Buruhadyanat Talinge Charhanadabi. The process of bhakti yoga, the secret of success. One must accept the bona fide spiritual master and render service unto him with great devotion and faith. Whatever one has in one's possession should be offered to the spiritual master. And in the association of saintly persons and devotees, one should worship the Lord, hear the glories of the Lord with faith, glorify the transcendental qualities and activities of the Lord, always meditate on the Lord's lotus feet and worship the deity of the Lord strictly according to the injunctions of the Shastra and Guru. So this is the potent processes of bhakti. And always meditate on the Lord's lotus feet in this way. Srila Prabhupada's purport. In the previous verse, it has been said that the process which immediately increases one's love and affection for the Supreme Personality of Godhead is the best of the many thousands of ways to become free from the entanglement of material existence. It is also said, Dhammasya tattvam hitam guhayam. Actually, the truth of religious principles is extremely confidential. So confidential, does that imply that it's very, very, very simple and easy for everyone? No, but yet, Prabhupada says next, nonetheless, even though it is confidential, nonetheless it can be understood very easily if, conditional case, if can be understood very easily if this condition is followed, it can be understood very easily if one actually adopts the principles of religion. As it is said, Dhammantu Shakshad Bhagavat Pranitam, the process of religion is enunciated by the Supreme Lord because He is the Supreme Authority. This is also indicated in the previous verse by the word Bhagavato Ditaha. The injunctions or directions of the Lord are infallible, and their benefits are fully assured. According to His directions, which are explained in this verse, the perfect form of religion. To practice bhakti yoga, one must first accept a bona fide spiritual master. Srila Rupa Goswami in his Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, 1274 through 75, advises Guru Parashrayas Tasmat Krishna Dikshari Shikshanam Vishram Bena Guru Seva Sadhu Vart Manuvartanam Sadharma Preacha Bogadi Tyaga Krishnasya Hetave. One's first duty is to accept a bona fide spiritual master. The student or disciple should be very inquisitive. He should be eager to know the complete truth about eternal religion, Sanatana Dharma. The word Guru Susaya means that one should personally serve the spiritual master by giving him bodily comforts, helping him in bathing, dressing, sleeping, eating, and so on. This is called Guru Shushushanam. A disciple should serve the spiritual master as a menial servant, and whatever he has in his possession should be dedicated to the spiritual master. Pranar Atar Diyavacha. Everyone has his life, his wealth, his intelligence, his words, and all of them should be offered to the Supreme Personality of Godhead through the via medium of the spiritual master. Everything should be offered to the spiritual master as a matter of duty, but the offering should be made to the spiritual master with heart and soul, not artificially to gain material prestige. This offering is called arpana. Moreover, one should live among devotees, saintly persons, to learn the etiquette and proper behavior of devotional service. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur remarks in this connection that whatever is offered to the spiritual master should be offered with love and affection, not for material adoration. Similarly, it is recommended that one associate with devotees, but there must be some discrimination. Actually, a sadhu, a saintly person, must be saintly in his behavior. Sadhuva sadacharaha. Unless one adheres to the standard behavior, one's position as a sadhu, a saintly person, is not complete. Therefore, a Vaishnava sadhu must completely adhere to the standard of behavior. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says that a Vaishnava, a person initiated into the Vaishnava cult, should be offered the respect befitting a Vaishnava, which means that he should be offered service and prayers. However, one should not associate with him if he is not a fit person with whom to associate. Okay, we'll stop here. questions or comments? Thank you very much. Such a nice, powerful verse and purport. Verse by Prahlad Maharaj, purport by Srila Prabhupada. Questions or comments? Yes.
I heard in one lecture from Prabhupada about regarding the verse where Krishna says, "For me comes knowledge, remembrance, and forgetfulness." When Prabhupada asks this question, one can ask this question: that why would Krishna make someone forget? But then I forgot the reason.
Oh no! How could you do this to us? So why don't you get the lecture and play it? We want to hear. What's your answer to that question? Why does Krishna make someone forget?
I'm not sure, but I think if I remember Prabhupada mentioned something to the extent that it's not that he makes someone forget, but because someone has material tendencies, he will be in such a dilemma if he remembers that he's true. So I think that's the gist of what Prabhupada wanted to say.
One could say Krishna allows one to forget. Why would Krishna allow one to forget? It's because his desire is not to be engaged in Krishna's service. So somewhere there is a misuse of free will. And then, because we have a desire not to be Krishna's servant, but to be separate from Krishna, a separate Lord, he allows us to come into the material world, where we can exhibit that inclination to be the center of existence, and we can try our best to have everything work according to our plan and our desires, and have everyone look at us as we're the most wonderful. And that's basically what the material world is. So he allows that to go on, because for there to be love, because our relationship with Krishna is love, it's coming through Krishna's internal energy. His Ladini Shakti, his loving potency. So that can't be forced. So when there's that misuse of free will, then Krishna allows us to make our attempt for happiness separate from him in the material world, and then everything springs from that. And then we require a false ego, because our real ego or identity is Krishna's servant, Krishna's lover, in one form or another, either as friend, servant, parent, or in the Madhurya conjugal relationship. So then, in the material world, he, out of his kindness, allows us to fulfill our desires. But that fulfillment of the desires requires that we forget our relationship with him. So that forgetfulness also comes from him. And also, if we remember, there's so much we think, oh, why is Krishna making us forget? But do we want to remember everything? Would it be possible? Just imagine if everything in our entire experience, even in this life, were coming at us all at once. How would we even walk? We couldn't even do anything, remember, because my mother, when I was a boy, used to tell me to turn off the light. So if I remembered that, and my teacher in the first grade told me 1 and 1 is 2, and in the second grade we were learning something else, in the fifth grade, because I took so much instructions all the way up for so many years. So if I was remembering everything at once and everything that everyone told me, don't forget to take out the garbage, don't forget this, don't forget. If we remember everything at once, it's like hearing every radio station at once. If you turned on your radio, you'd hear nothing. You'd be completely bewildered. So by Krishna's grace, we forget a lot of it. And he allows what our particular karma is now to come through, and he gives us remembrance of that as well. So all that comes from him. Is completely dependent on him. Sarvasya Chaham. And every living entity, it is I. Riddhe, son of Isto, I'm situated in everyone's heart. Riddhi. Matya Smittam Gyanam Apohanam Cha. And for me comes knowledge, forgetfulness, remembrance. But not only that comes for me, that's for conditioned souls, but also Vedes Chasavar. He can give more than that, this remembrance and forgetfulness of karma. Vedes of all the Vedas. Aham Eva Vidyo. I am to be known. It is me who is to be known through the Vedas. Vedanta Krit. How do you know that you're to be? Why? Well, because he's the compiler of, as Vyasadeva, he's the compiler of Vedanta. Vedanta Krit Vedavit. And it is Avacham, and it is me who is Vedavit. Because he is Vedavit, he knows the Vedas, he can compile Vedanta. And the Bhagavatam is the commentary on Vedanta. After Srila Vyasadeva wrote the Vedanta Sutra, he gave everything, plus all the knowledge of in the Puranas, etc. He gave everything in its ultimate conclusion here in the Bhagavatam. And now he's, Prahlad is giving some of that to us. Just imagine if you remembered all your lives at once too. You were a crab once, and a monkey, and an amoeba. And if everything came rushing back, madness. All the pain, every living into every pain that you've ever felt in your life. Imagine if we think, oh, why does Krishna make me forget? Out of his kindness.
So, one can say in one sense that Krishna actually fulfills whatever one desires. It is why it is that one, that is also one reason.
Yeah, yeah, tamam prapadyante. Yeah, because we don't, because he's reciprocating with us according to our karma and desires.
So, basically, the essence is just to desire rightly and
then
we get the ultimate result.
Yeah. The essence is to be sincere.
That's right. So, how to desire something rightly in sincere desire? Because in a contaminated condition, it's not easy to desire something.
Mm. That's why in this verse it said that we should associate with saintly devotees. The key is association. Krishna bhakti janma mula hoya sarasangi. The root comes from that, and all the way up to Purnamukhyanga, all the way up to the very top, it's all based on association. If we associate with materialistic people, it's like what's going to happen to you if you associate with nothing for our PCA people. Don't take this personally. But if you associate with people who are sneezing all day long and are sick all day long, what's going to happen? You're going to get sick. And if you associate with healthy people, you catch their mood. That's the key. Therefore we hear words of the great devotees, Prabhupada, who's everyone's guru, of Prahlad Maharaj, who's everyone's guru, one of the Mahajans, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, who's everyone's guru, and associate with devotees, Tandera Charana Sevi Bhakti Sanevas Janame, Janame Hoy, E Abhilas. Narottama Das Thakur says, this is my desire, E Abhilas, this is my desire, Janamane. Janamane, birth after birth, this is what I desire. Associate with pure devotees, and that's what Prabhupada wished ISKCON to be, an association of pure devotees, that everyone who came in contact with so naturally come up by catching the contagious disease of Krishna consciousness. I'll start sneezing in ecstasy. But there's so much weight on the devotees to be worthy in that sense.
Just one small to that. So let's say one basically, you know, in a contaminated condition, offers something to the Lord. His fruits of his activities, he offers it to the Lord. But in that offering, you know, there might still be a little bit of contamination.
Or a lot of contamination. False ego.
That's right.
Yeah.
How could the Lord accept such an offering?
When it is done through a devotee. So what devotee is going to say that I'm pure? So the process is to offer through the disciplic succession. So although I'm not pure, certainly I offer it to Prabhupada, and that's the kindness of the Guru, that he accepts something like Prabhupada, he accepts something that is impure and he himself offers it. And of course, and even Prabhupada wouldn't say I'm pure. Of course, we see what he did and how he acted. He said, I offer it to my guru. So what this does, there's a mystery in the disciplic succession. On one hand, it goes up step by step, rung by rung. But in another sense, it goes directly to Krishna too. And Prabhupada said, this is the mystery of the disciplic succession. Simultaneously direct and through everyone. Because that's the process. That Krishna accepts things through. So therefore, we say about Prabhupada, his divine grace, because by who is the his in it? By Krishna's divine grace, he's given us Prabhupada, who allows us impure, wretched, contaminated creatures to make offerings. And when someone is making an offering to Krishna, he does so in the mood of being a servant of his guru. I'm making this offering on my guru's behalf, on his order. Amara agyai guruhai. On my order, you become guru and save this land. You preach. So if we wait till we feel like we're pure enough to do it, you know, as my mother used to say, you can wait till the cows come home. And in Perth, they don't come home very frequently. And the more one feels unfit, probably the better one is. And we see the great acharyas set such examples of humility, the words of Kaviraj Goswami, ununderstandable to us, because engaged in such intense worship, bhajan. But yet that's how they feel, and yet we become proud so easily. How is this? And if we start seeing our faults, we fall apart. So, there's an art of being humble and taking shelter of Krishna. And not rebuilding the false ego and blaming it on everyone else when Krishna kindly reveals something to us, our incapacity. And we see how we are dependent on his divine grace. Did you want to add something?
I understand. Just the point of forgetfulness, Krishna would bless us to forget all the aspirations to dominate and enjoy in this world. That would be a great, great blessing of forgetfulness.
Yeah. Yeah, and that would be required for getting the spiritual world. Forget. Krishna allows us to remember that which we wish we could forget so that we take shelter of him deeply. Because the way of getting rid of the darkness is to come more and more into the light. Because the more we think, oh, I don't want to remember this and I don't want to remember that, the more we remember it. Aversion is attraction. But the more we focus our consciousness on Krishna, the better. Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai, Prahlad Maharaj ki jai, Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Gaur Bhaktivinoda ki jai.